staff asked, and Darren and the DA said, yes, RGC can. That's what I was told.
I'd love to see the authority for that. Because there's nothing in 373, it says in the statute that we have the authority under the, for 373 funds, which are on gas tax. Doesn't give us any authority over a sewer fund. So, I mean, you can just, but they're not the lowest bidder if you take that out in the road work. Look at how much difference that is. $80,000. I'm like, yikes. And the overall bids weren't.
Use RTC stuff.
Yeah.
Can we borrow you from there?
Just want to make sure you're what, under what authority.
So we have a question, whether we have legal authority to approve funding from the sewer fund.
I don't think you have authority over the sewer.
I don't either. But I thought that she, anyway, I don't either. I can't find.
Yeah, so that's why I wanted to talk to you.
What I was told was that you and Darren were talking about.
Put it to the RTC fund.
Because it was a road project of which RTC has purview over. And that there's a massive projects where utility funds are used.
Or just come to us too for the sewer portion.
Here, what's the sewer portion?
$200,000. It wasn't under the $50,000, which is what it's kind of. This goes to the board unless it exceeds $50,000, so normally they're small. First. So that the dollars are clear. Yes.
Staff had asked, we were told, and I think the biggest reason I saw it, like I said, is that they are not the lowest bidder without the sewer portion. If you take the sewer portion out, we can't take the sewer. I get it, but we cannot say that's legally the best road, lowest responsive road one, because it's not. I mean, I know that's the way we did it.
Let's get some.
Get this down on the floor.
This is my chair. Every meeting, and all the boards I serve at, I'm like, don't mess with my chair.
Been there.
That's just one of those things. Before you even release the RFP, you lose the money. Or.
Are y'all plugged in?
Right, then that grants the authority to the RTC to go ahead and use that money. This is actually.
Yeah, but like you said, that's not. Yes,
delegated authority.
I think the issue.
Yes.
Different.
Well,
that's not true, actually. Well, yeah.
It's good for our to see that sewer funds.
We think wars and stuff right there.
We can't do as many projects.
I want to make sure that things aren't happening behind the scenes.
So, yeah.
Make sure other things are not happening behind the scenes.
Which she's very good.
I know. You know what I mean. Everything needs to be.
So, yeah, we're all kind of adjusting.
On the button, buddy.
Yeah, it's in the gut.
Hey, so
I'm just working on the government.
Okay.
Don't look at me. Oh, yeah.
Because we haven't seen the sun in a month and a half.
I couldn't.
I did. It was in Palm Beach.
Oh, right.
I can't see the sun.
I had the wrong one, maybe.
I think somebody turned that TV off. Oh, yes, that's two.
Hello.
Oh, okay.
You had the wrong one, yes.
Sorry.
And I didn't notice.
Okay.
I looked at it. Yeah. That's two over there. This is one over here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Only one time. How can that be? Took me a second. I know. It took me a second to go, huh?
Okay, that was good. I'm laughing because I already thought it to myself when I read it.
Yeah, I'm not smart enough to keep it to myself. I have to verbalize it.
Well, they were all quiet, so I didn't want to be boisterous at that moment.
Oh.
Yeah, and he's on his own.
I'm just saying, the engineer, I don't want to see this.
Yeah.
It's
all you.
How do I know? Oh, green light.
Green light.
Good afternoon. With a little bit of a late start, but here we're ready to start the Campo meeting here. Can I get roll call, please, Kathy?
Chairperson Kimbrough.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Steadfield.
Here.
Member Bagwell.
Here.
Member Bonkowski.
Here.
Member Erb.
Here.
Member Keller.
Here.
Member Macquarie.
Here.
Ex officio Member Rosenberg.
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you. Welcome, Vida. First meeting. Thank you for coming from Lyon County. No action items today, so we keep it pretty easy today for you.
Okay. Easy.
All right. Is there anything that changes in the agenda for the items, Lucia?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Any disclosures for items? Probably not.
There's
no action items.
That's right. No disclosures.
All right. Thank you. So this is a chance for anybody in the public wanting to come forward to speak to Campo on hopefully matters not related to agenda items. Seeing none, can come back to approval. Can I get an action? Let's see, a motion or discussion on the minutes? 5A, possible action.
Mr. Chair, I would move to approve the minutes of the Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization for February 13th, 2019, as presented.
Second.
Second. Any more discussion? Seeing none, call for the question. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Great. All unanimous. Thank you. So we move to the public meeting item 6A for information only. Presentation and discussion on the One Tahoe transportation funding initiative being undertaken by Tahoe Transportation District. Who should I invite? Hi, Carl.
Good evening, Carl Hastie.
Oh. See, every other speaker system we have, red means go, not green. So,
I was going to say, but green's better for this committee.
I like it better, too, but it confused me momentarily, so thank you, Lucia. Appreciate the opportunity. It's good to see a bunch of familiar faces. For those of you who don't know what the Tahoe Transportation District is, we are a bi-state special district at Lake Tahoe. So within our jurisdiction are portions of five counties, one municipality, and the two states. And our job is to focus on implementing transportation at the basin. We also have the authority to go outside of the basin for purposes of connecting Tahoe. And so you may see our transit system down here, because we go over the hill at South Shore and connect Minden-Gardnerville with Carson City. And we also do projects up at the basin. And so what we're here to talk to you about tonight, and I'll turn this over in a moment to Greg, is an initiative that we are looking at. It's a project, actually. We consider it a project. Looking at how we plug the funding gap for our regional transportation plan at the lake. A lot of our direction at the lake is about providing alternatives to the vehicle, because we are not in the business there by statute of expanding roadways, of widening them. It's too costly monetarily, and it's too costly environmentally. Yet we have a huge urban demand on a largely rural highway system up there that's overwhelming us. We can handle a lot of people. We can't handle a lot of vehicles. So we have a lot of the solutions up there, but what we are missing, like many communities, is the funding to do it, and that's what the One Tahoe thing is about. So that's what we wanted to share with you tonight, just so that you're aware, and that we'd be happy to come back some other time. We've got a ways to go on this process, but we are looking to see what we can do to address our needs there. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Am I on now? Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is Greg Krause, and I am part of the consultant team that's working for the Tahoe Transportation District on the One Tahoe project. And today I just want to give you an overview of our project. I'll go into a little more detail. Carl's actually given a very good summary. But what I want to do is do this at kind of a high level and make sure I allow time for any comments and or questions that you might have and try to address those. I'll go to the PowerPoint, and staff, thank you for getting me set up here and entrusting your machine to me. These images, you know, we all are very fortunate, I think, or we realize that to live so close to a treasure like Lake Tahoe. There are so many different ways to enjoy it, lots of recreation, scenic beauty. In addition to all of us that live close by and enjoy it, there are a lot of people that travel from afar and make the time and effort to try to enjoy it also. And the fact that it's a great experience is obviously continuing to encourage people to do that. But with all these visitors coming to the lake, as Carl said, we have real problems, and I'm sure you're well aware of it. And the one thing I want to point out is that we've done quite a bit of study. Carl and his organization have really looked in detail at who is at the lake and what are the travel patterns looking like. And I can tell you that over 50 million trips in and out of the basin on an annual basis are being recorded, and of those, 75% are visitors. And I would note, because I think it's really important in trying to understand the problem and possible solutions, 40% of those visitor trips are day trips. They are not spending the night. So I think it's a lot of us. We are close, we go up for the day, and we enjoy it. So with that reality, we also have to consider the future and analysis of growth in the primary kind of markets that bring people to Tahoe. There is a lot of growth, and it's expected in the next 15 plus years, we might see a 25% increase in visitation to Lake Tahoe. And as most of you probably know, or many of you know, I know who are engineers and planners, when a road is already at capacity or over capacity and you add a few more cars, it's not a linear relationship. Congestion grows much more quickly when you're already over capacity, and we certainly are at the peak periods at the lake. And as Carl said, we don't have the option like many urbanized areas. When you have more traffic growth, when you have more travel, you can't just go build new roads at Lake Tahoe or even widen them. the environmental and economic costs are just too great. So what is the solution? Well, we've actually known for many years, and I know Carl is probably the one that gets tired of saying it, but for decades, it has been identified that what Tahoe really needs is a comprehensive system that gives you an option to drive in your car, that has a great transit system, and allows for the travel within the basin and all around it, but also links, creates better links for all of those gateways in both Nevada and California into the basin. The current adopted long-range plan you may be familiar with is called Linking Tahoe, the Regional Transportation Plan. It was completed in 2017, and it was the result of, as its predecessors, hundreds of meetings and a huge amount of public review and input and many agencies and perhaps this board also in trying to develop it and come to a consensus as to what really is the problem and what are the solutions. Obviously, by state, two states, five counties, many state and federal agencies all worked very hard to develop that plan. And while it's a very thorough and I think very comprehensive and effective document, in just a few simple words, it says we need that comprehensive system, including transit, and in terms of the linkages into the basin, perhaps even extensions of rail services, as well as transit, and then within the basin, improving the walk paths, the bike paths, to ensure that we have good walk access for travel as well as access to public transit, the addition of ferries for cross-lake travel. It's really quite simple, I think, in terms of the overall concept. The detail of implementation is a challenge, but the real issue that we're facing, and the one that has been faced in the basin for decades, is there is not the financial resources to implement the plan. So that's where we come in. One Tahoe is going to take the steps necessary to make sure that we come up with a solution and that we get it implemented. So it's quite an involved scope of work, but if I can summarize the major portions of that work that we are doing and have done, we started with a couple of initial tasks, one of which was to identify the shortfall. And again, we're going from the adopted consensus community plan, the Linking Tahoe Regional Transportation Plan as our source. We developed a process in when we go to the public and ask for their solutions to solve this funding problem, how are we going to evaluate them? And we did that and got approval for both a multi-stage screening process and a multi-stage public outreach process and evaluation criteria that we would use. And we have specific criteria we use at each stage of the screening. Anyway, that process was done in the last few months, and we got approval from the Tahoe Transportation District Board to go forth. We are now kind of finishing our first round of reaching out to the public. We'll have two more. We'll continue that over the spring and summer. And ultimately, by December of 2019, what we want to bring forward is a final recommended solution, and that's the funding solution and all of the legislative and procedural and voting steps that are going to be necessary to implement that. It's, I think, a tall order, but something that absolutely has to be done. I talked about the outreach. Again, we have three different rounds. We have a very long list of those stakeholder groups, in addition to general public meetings, that we want to reach out to. And I guess it's 140 and counting, working throughout the basin and going outside the basin like we are tonight to try to make sure that we've reached out to everyone that has an interest and a stake in this plan and how we come up with the solution. I won't go through this, but there's a long list of stakeholders that we're going out to, and that list is getting longer every day. If I can, I want to spend just a minute on some of the facts and the challenges that we're dealing with. When we looked at the adopted Tahoe Regional Transportation Plan, we looked at the projected costs as well as the projected revenues, and we did do a slight modification. We converted everything to current dollars, 2017 dollars, the year of the plan, and we think that helps in terms of making it relevant to today's dollars. And even with that conversion and some other adjustments, The bottom line is the shortfall is over the next 23 years, $1.5 billion. Unfortunately, that is with a B, billion. To make that a little more manageable, when you look at the average additional revenue needed over the next 23 years, it works out to be about $67 million. And I know even that number probably sounds very daunting, but to maybe put it into perspective, that represents 1% of the annual economic activity up at the Tahoe Basin. So it is a big number, but hopefully that makes it somewhat understandable. The screening process that we want to use with all of the public input and stakeholder feedback on, okay, this is how we're going to try to solve the problem, again, is a multi-stage process. And the basic idea is to try to go through all the ideas and find out what worked best for Tahoe. Now, guiding that process are evaluation criteria. And again, I've got a long list here, and if you've done these kind of projects, they probably look somewhat familiar to you, but I want to point out several of them that I think are unique to the Tahoe Basin, representing the realities and frankly challenges and constraints that we face there. First is any proposal that's going to require California or Nevada or both to do either a statewide vote or a constitutional amendment, we think is too difficult, and it's frankly a fatal flaw. We think that's too much to ask and will make this process not be able to move forward. Another consideration is, as I mentioned before, when you look at the travel in the basin, we're looking at the contributions of the shares paid by both the residents who have to contribute and the visitors, but recognize that, as I mentioned before, visitors represent 75% of all those vehicle trips. And I really want to make clear that we understand it is important to have the visitors we have and even more come to Tahoe. We love the visitors, but we don't love their vehicles. So we're trying to find a way to make sure we fund those services that allow for more people to be in the basin, travel the basin, but have fewer vehicles on the streets. And these are the additional evaluation criteria that we use. I think the other thing that I want to point out that I think is really critical and is one of our evaluation criteria is the fungibility across uses and or jurisdictions. And perhaps a more commonly known word is flexibility. And what we're talking about is any funding solutions in the basin that help pay for this vision of what the transportation should be needs to allow for expenditures across modes. Because as you may be aware or probably are aware, you know, if you've got a gas tax, you have to spend it on pavements. And there are other revenue sources that are only available for transit. We think, given the need for a seamless, comprehensive system that's going to be multimodal and include some pavements, whether it's paths or bike trails or other improvements to roadways, but again, we can't build new roads or greatly expand them, we need to have that flexibility. The other flexibility is across political jurisdictions. Given that there are 2 states and 5 counties, it will be very difficult, if not impossible, to create a system where, gee, the money was collected in Douglas County, so that bus line can't be funded past the Douglas County line. We need to have that flexibility to allow to build a seamless system within the basin and make sure it works effectively. This slide, again, I apologize, it's a lot of information, but it's simply pointing out that when we go through the kind of tiers of evaluation of the ideas that we get from the public as to what is the best solution, whether it's a single measure or a whole package of them, is that we're going to, and we think we'll probably end up with over 100 to start with, we can't look at each one of those in great depth. We're going to have a kind of a more qualitative analysis in the early steps, work our way down, get more refined. But as we get to the last couple, and certainly with, you know, the final package that is recommended, it'll be very heavy in terms of the quantitative analysis and ensure that we've done all of the, you know, number crunching to make sure we've got a solution that works and meets the needs of our community. As I mentioned, we're out kind of finishing up this first round. We had listening sessions in State Line and also in Incline Village, and we have one in a couple weeks or 10 days up at Tahoe City. We're doing as much as we can with all the types of media, try to get the word out. I would point out to the board that we have a One Tahoe webpage that you can go directly to find out what's going on with the project and to give your feedback. So for you or for anyone that's interested, certainly recommend you do that. Or obviously come to our meetings and let us know what you think. And again, you know, we've got a challenge here. It's been before us for a while, but I think the time really is now for us to make sure that we do start coming up with the solutions and allow us to preserve Tahoe so it's there for future generations. And again, you know, I am here and Carl is here to listen to your ideas. We at One Tahoe feel like, you know, this is a challenge, but it's absolutely essential that we succeed here. And with that, I'll thank you very much for your time and love to hear any ideas or comments that you have, and I'll try to answer any questions that you have. Thank you.
Questions?
Good afternoon.
So I see that you are indicating that if it requires a constitutional amendment, you don't see that as a potential on your funding sources, but do you see that you'll actually need legislative changes to be able to accomplish the, I call it the changing of the color of the money, right, so that everybody can put it into the project and it doesn't necessarily have to go for the originating source of the money?
Carl Hayes here. Yeah, yes, we anticipate that we will need to go to the two states. And for the simple fact of the matter that the way most local sources are set up, they're on a county basis. We don't even have a full county in our jurisdiction. The TGD has its own funding authority. It has proven to be not workable. And so that's an option there through the Bi-State Compact of revising that in order to do it. So depending on what kind of comes out of this package, we do are anticipating that we would need to go to the two legislatures to help authorize that to go, that to happen.
I have a few comments, but it's like a very weldy project, I would assume. How do you go ask the public potential funding mechanisms? How does that come out of your mouth at the meeting to say, how would you like to tax yourself for this vision? And I'm not being cynical. I'm actually, how do you sell that? Because, I mean, every community needs to sell that.
You know, that's a fair question, Mark. For a lot of the people who are residents at Tahoe, they're pretty familiar with the visitation. They're pretty familiar with what are other successful mountain resort communities and what have they done. And so they also know that the demand up there is greater than anything that they can financially support. So this really is about appealing to the full constituency of Tahoe, which we all love and use, with that very first part of this going, do you recognize there's a problem? If we all recognize the problem and we all recognize that there's an experience that we want to keep, then it's really not hard to start getting people thinking about ideas of what they would do or whom they think should pay. That's always an easy one to get. And it's really about going through this public process and to invite and hear every potential idea and then vet those and kind of go back through several rounds of having this dialogue with that constituency to arrive at what's going to be the most, make the most sense. But when we start talking to folks about ideas on this, I've not found anybody who doesn't have some notion. Now, they're not all workable, but they've got an idea and they want it fixed. That's the other thing. So there is the interest, and I think that's part of what we're really having to speak to here. There is the interest. So, you know, just to illustrate kind of some of this growing demand, I mean, the 1980 Compact's what created TTD, and I've been doing some looking at this. Since that time, California's population has increased by over 16 million people, and Nevada's population is about quadrupled. So this is increasing demand on here, yet our beach space isn't growing, our parking spaces aren't growing, our camping spaces aren't growing. But everybody still wants to come up here. So, you know, how do we do that? Because we can accommodate a lot. And I think this is where that common interest also gets people thinking about how that could be paid for.
Thank you. So, I mean, there's familiar funding sources. Room tax, gas tax, sales tax, income tax. I mean, there's all these sources people have, but they might want you to cut the pie different about who gets what share of the pie versus taxing themselves anymore. Yeah. Take this. We want a bigger piece of the pie for this.
Yeah.
Then you got to get all the jurisdictions lined up with that same. This is a.
And that's where all these ideas kind of come into. So it is this invitation, and who knows? Because we've already heard some interesting ideas that I've never thought of. Doesn't mean they're all going to be workable, but if it's something that we're going to have to potentially seek legislation for in the first place, and then I think that's where this all comes into. This is about inviting the community, the larger community, to be part of this process and figure this out, and then come back to them and say, all right, this is what this looks like this could do. You know, do we have the support? Do we have the political support? And as part of this process, too, there's why we have built into this some polls, some statewide polls, because our constituency, you know, the majority of who's visiting Tahoe is coming from Nevada and California and both ends of the state. It's surprising how many visitors we have from southern Nevada and how many visitors we have from southern California. So I think, you know, in a Tahoe, we are so process-oriented and so community saturated in terms of involvement. It is the only way to go. There are plenty of ideas out there.
Is there any other example in this country where you get a bi-state? Like the compact seemed to be the strength in what's happening at Tahoe. You always have the compact.
There are certainly other bi-state compacts and certainly other resource areas that have that. I don't know exactly like Tahoe that have certainly not have the same mix of things. And so, you know, they have opportunities that we don't, and their geography doesn't maybe constrain them as much as ours does. And I don't know that they have the visitation that we do. But there are examples of other areas who've tackled this very issue to handle their demand, which is still largely a rural highway system that has lots of visitation. So how do you deal with that? We have a lot of examples, and particularly here in the Mountain West, where that's been done.
All right, well, I want to remind you that this year the water is probably going to go to high water mark, so there goes half your beaches again. So it's like another factor that comes
in. Yeah, I think by the time we were halfway through February, it had raised a foot.
Yeah,
so just I read in that a couple paper, weeks. Yeah. So
I congratulate you. I'm working so hard on this that hopefully some of the solutions you look at and some of the other communities, like I was teasing Lucia, we're going to have a one Carson city after if you're successful. Find out how to get in tax sources. But ours is not as much about transit as pavement. So,
right. Yeah. And even, quite honestly, a lot of this gap up with the basin, I mean, it's not so much for you guys because you don't have the development up there, but for the other jurisdictions. You know, when it comes to what we refer to as the TMDL, the total maximum daily load, you know, what affects Lake Clarity, this is a good part of the gap is what local governments need to do relevant to their roads. So this is another benefit of this is we're kind of leveraging each other here by doing this rather than this one-off kind of approach, which is always difficult.
Yeah, I got one more question. I'm going to ask one more thing. Do you have I forgot the term for them. Nevada has that legislative committee that meets.
Yes, the Oversight Committee. Office.
Have they become a champion for this for you guys?
Well, you know, with the timing of this work, then we will be in position to be taking this up with the committee in the off session. And that's an Oversight Committee for the basin in the Marlette Lake system, or in water system. So this is part of our timing with this. This is really a 15-month-long process. And so that's the idea of the last quarter of the year is to basically have a package that we think can be supported. And then we'll start in earnest working with the legislative aspect as we need to do.
Right. Thank you, Brad. Uh-huh.
And in your presentation, one of the bullet points is that the annual need for new revenue is approximately $67 million a year and that that's about 1% of the total economic activity in the basin. So has anybody suggested to you yet that if you're looking at this from a percentage of the economic activity, that a gross receipts tax or a value-added tax would probably be the simplest and most efficient mechanism to do that. I mean, because then it applies just to the geographic area of the basin, and it also would apply to all economic activity.
And those are the kinds of ideas that we're soliciting and looking for right now. So it's one that we will consider and look at and have the team evaluate against that criteria and so on to see what it does. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Anything else? Anybody from the public like to come forward on this item? Seeing none? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. And remember, onetahoe.org.
Catchy phrase.
All right, next item on the agenda, 6B, for information only, presentation, discussion on an ongoing efforts to update Carson City's Americans with Disability Act, ADA, transition plan for transportation facilities, unified planning, work program, task 3.4.
Thank you, Dirk. Chair. Yeah. Dirk Goring for the record. So staff wanted to take this opportunity to share with the board kind of some of the progress that we've been making on this ADA transition plan. So I want to start with a little bit of history. Back in 1990, there was the American with Disabilities Act that got started. Shortly after that, there was a Department of Justice that implemented kind of the regulations. In those regulations, there was a requirement for agencies that have 50 employees or greater to have an ADA transition plan. And now what we're focusing on today is an ADA transition plan for transportation facilities, so that it doesn't go into the buildings, but it's really for the right-of-way and pedestrian walkways. The ADA transition plan, it is a living document, so it's going to evolve over time. The purpose of the plan is to document the city's efforts in reducing barriers to ADA access. The updated plan is not a new plan. We are building on a past plan. In 2015, there was significant efforts to start an ADA transition plan for transportation facilities. It was limited in scope, but there was a lot of effort done in that plan. It started an inventory. So, for example, the plan looked at 26 signalized intersections, 15 sidewalk corridors, and 41 transit stops. It outlined a plan to move forward. It projected about a 15-year time period to resolve the ADA barriers. So now I want to kind of go into some of the requirements of an ADA transition plan and touch on how this plan is going to incorporate those. So first requirement one is to identify, I'm not going to hit all the requirements, but I am going to hit the major ones. So one, to identify the physical barriers. So for example, when there's a curb ramp, there's sometimes we have curb ramps that provide access from sidewalks onto crosswalks and onto a sidewalk onto another street. We have issues where we do not have curb ramps, or we have curb ramps that do not meet standards. We have cases where we have obstacles in the sidewalks, such as a telephone pole where you have a 4-foot sidewalk and the pole's in the middle. You really need per the ADA standards, you need a 4-foot area to pass to get through. And then also there's pedestrian push buttons, for example, that need to be, they can't be too high, they need to be under 48 inches, I believe, and you need to provide an ADA surface up to the push button so that you're within 12 inches of that, and that doesn't always happen. I want to know that this plan is building an inventory of barriers and ADA assets, and that this is going to be worked into the overall city asset management program, so they're going to be integrated. Right now, the city has really a three-prong approach on how we reduce our barriers. The first one that we do stems from Public Works, and it has to do with our street maintenance crews. We have crews throughout the year that go out and make improvements to sidewalks. Sometimes it's because the sidewalk is in poor condition or because it's not compliant. And so we work to make these improvements and to reduce these barriers. Most of this is complaint driven, and most of this is happening on local streets. The second prong is from community development standpoint. So we have permits, whether we have a new subdivision or we have a new business that's coming in that's renovating an existing property. We condition that development to construct improvements to standards or to bring infrastructure up to standards. So that's the second prong. And then the third prong is Public Works annual capital projects. So every year we have capital projects. And as you know, in April, Carson City implemented a pavement management program. So something that this plan is going to look at is to adopt that strategy from an implementation schedule standpoint, but also from a scheduling standpoint. I'm sorry. And a prioritization standpoint. And that's one of those requirements of the transition plan is to prioritize what we need to do. And so, as you know, the pavement management plan has districts. We divided the city up into five districts, and then we also prioritize projects. We looked at high-use facilities, so mainly our regional roads. And this is in line with a lot of the requirements and the intent of ADA, which is to provide access to essential services such as businesses, medical facilities, school zones, transit routes, and governmental offices. The plan will also document a good faith effort in design. The ADA requirements aren't blind to the realities that the world exists as in funding or resource constraints. The goal is to build everything to ADA standards, but there are times when we can't. And we are in that situation a lot. And what this plan is going to do is going to help us document that we've made a practical effort to comply to the ADA standards, and it's going to give us credit for the areas that we might not have been able to meet, you know, the cross slope of an improvement because we have design constraints, such as right of way, adjacent buildings, and so forth. And money can be incorporated into the practical feasibility extent. Also, one thing the plan will also do is there is a difference between designing for new facilities, such as a road that didn't exist, and then modifying a facility that does exist. So there's two different design requirements, and this plan is going to identify both of those and help us kind of understand the difference. So now I want to introduce Dan Anderson. He's going to go into how staff has been growing our inventory.
All right, thank you, Dirk. Daniel Anderson, Carson City Transportation Planner Analyst. I just want to briefly go through our workflow process and GIS interface. This is some of the new software that we have developed and using as far as applications go to provide all of this data collection for our city sidewalks, ramps, and ADA improvements. We built this app with a partnership from Atkins, which is one of the contractors for the city. The app is designed for data collection and presentation purposes. So as you can see right now, what we are looking at is our current sidewalk and ADA ramp inventory, along with our districts pavement districts where we're focusing our work. We have completed our collector streets and arterial streets. Right now, we're in the process of moving into local streets, getting sidewalks and curb ramp data. So the app is used for on-the-ground data collection via a tablet or smartphone. It also can be utilized in the office, utilizing our aerial imagery and Google Street View to find these areas where we have ramps and sidewalk. We are also working with other staff who are in the field. For example, we have staff collecting manhole inspection data. While they're out doing the inspections, they're also asked to start looking at sidewalks, missing ramps, and existing ramps that aren't collected yet as far as local streets go. So with this app, we're also improving our city work order forms. And by doing that, we can provide a better cost analysis of ADA improvements, the material used for those improvements, and all of that goes into a better documentation for our good faith effort for improving and updating ADA facilities. So it's a very powerful app, and we're trying to get as many people as we can to use it. So looking forward, we're at this point in time right now, but we want to focus on getting missing ramps. There are a lot of locations throughout the city where ramps are needed, and we also want to start focusing on condition assessments so we can track the life of a certain sidewalk or ramp. And this is all building to make a better inventory and analysis for our ADA improvements. That's all I have, unless there's any questions from the board. I'll hand it back to Dirk.
A few more comments. Kind of want to go over the next steps. So we do want to have a public meeting where we invite them in and get their comments on the plan and understand their concerns. We're hoping to do that in late spring, and then we're hoping to wrap this up in late summer. And one thing I want to mention is that we are working with NDOT. Peter Shaw is with NDOT, and he is responsible for reviewing our ADA transition plans to make sure that we're in compliance. And so we have been working with him, and he'll be reviewing the final document. So that concludes our comments, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Dirk or Dan, does this app, will it integrate with the Carson City Asset Management platform? Inventory platform?
Yes. To answer that, we are working currently with asset management, and it's going to be an integrated system, so we can manage everything from ADA requirements such as ramps, signage, crosswalks, everything like that will be integrated into one asset management. Transportation will act as its own asset to the city.
Just want to make sure we're not doing the work twice.
One thing to add also is Dan actually came from working with Matt Lawton, who's asset manager for Public Works. So we are in communication. We have meetings to go over what we're doing and what they're doing so that we don't duplicate efforts and they all integrate seamlessly.
Any other questions?
Go ahead, Chaz.
I was just wondering, does the city... do we have a dedicated budget for sidewalk and ramp improvements, or is it just sort of on this as-needed basis?
As part of the CAMPO UPWP, we have started including tasks for asset management. As part of Carson City for, like, RTC transportation, there's not a dedicated line item for asset management. What we are trying to do, what Dan spoke to, was integrate all of the activities through all of the different divisions so that everyone's using the same systems. And even if someone's not specifically going out to inventory a curb ramp, if we have utility folks going out for a manhole or our parks folks going out at the trailhead of somewhere, that everyone is aware of the systems and we can all contribute to a comprehensive system.
Yeah, thank you. That was... That wasn't quite what I was trying to ask, but thank you for the information. So in the actual construction, you mentioned that mostly as a result of complaints, you go out, city forces go out and fix whatever, a ramp or something or a sidewalk. Is that like a line item in the budget, or did you just have an allowance somewhere there for doing that sort of work?
Darren Schultz for the record, Public Works. We have a line item in our streets division of Public Works, specifically set aside for sidewalk repair and maintenance. It is never enough. In fact, they finish with that money maybe 2 or 3 months before the end of the fiscal year, and then we move those crews onto other street projects because they're out of money in there. And that money is specifically just for supplies for sidewalk repair and maintenance. It doesn't it doesn't cover the salary of the people that work on it. That line item for fiscal 20, I want to say, is budgeted around $220,000.
Comment. And then I think also they're continually applying to other grant sources for sidewalk money, too, because there simply is not enough in the RTC component. The CDBG is often sidewalk funds and maybe even redevelopment for sidewalk funds. So those aren't dedicated funding sources, but they certainly give it a shot to see if they can get some out of any grants too.
Sandra?
I'm glad I had a little time. I'm still trying to figure out how to word this exactly. It's sort of a comment, sort of a question, but just to clarify, this is just Carson City, right? Not the whole Campo boundary. And so my understanding is the other entities that fall partially within the Campo boundaries have to do their own ADA transition plan. So that was first the statement. Then the question is, how is Campo then coordinating, or do we need to, should we, on those ADA transition plans from a planning perspective within the Campo boundary? Does that make any sense at all?
That was going to be my question, actually. How is it? Does Douglas County and Lyon County have the same apps or software so you guys can talk to each other and have an opportunity for funding through Campo?
I guess I can answer that question. For the record, John Arp, Douglas County Public Works. We do not have the same maps at this point in time with Carson City or Campo in regards to our ADA process. We're probably a few steps behind Carson City in our transition plan. We had none that existed. We've started it over the last year, basically because of NDOT mandating it. So I don't know if that's
federal.
It's a federal. It is. It without the plan, Department of Justice has a lot of authority on this. So it is a requirement by the feds, and we're trying to move forward with it as well. Funding is always an issue. I do have a line item just for ADA improvements. We usually do some every year. And with addition to projects are required to update. So.
That said, although the ADA transition plan that exists, I guess, within Campo or that we're talking about today is just for Carson City, just like we've done with the pavement survey where now Campo's moving on to Douglas County, I think there's every intention, in my mind at least, to make sure that in the long term, you know, we're looking at the full Campo area for those improvements and that planning.
Go ahead, Brad.
Sorry. This app, is this a Campo app or is it a Carson City app?
Carson City, Campo is funding the resources, so staff's time to help develop this app, and the app is being implemented throughout Carson City. So it is a team effort, but there are resources from Campo that are being used to build the inventory, which is a requirement of the ADA transition plan.
So this app could then be expanded to Western Lyon and Northern Douglas at a minimum, right? So are there licensing issues that we might run into if Douglas County and Lyon County wanted to expand that and do their entire counties, if that's even feasible? I understand that you have a ways to go, as does Lyon County, but if we can provide the app, maybe that's a foundation that you can build on.
Dan Anderson. The record. Yes, when we first started developing this app, we wanted to make it public. So anybody, any county, we can give permission to, and they can use the exact same standards in what we're doing as far as data collection. So yes, we could easily give this to Douglas County or Lyon County, and they could do the exact same data collection that we're doing right now.
Christmas.
And so related to that, NDOT also has an ADA transition plan. And I'm not sure, I see this as an ESRI platform, which is fairly common, so it makes it easy to transfer data. So I'm not sure if we're coordinating with you guys on that, on our ADA transition project. I mean, ours are limited to our our facilities that we own. But from an information standpoint, if we're not already, we'd be happy to share information with you.
No, that's a very great point. As of right now, we haven't shared anything with NDOT, but I think we'd be more than happy to go back and forth.
And I don't know if it's needed, but if it is, we'd be happy to share information as needed.
Any other questions? Seeing none, is anybody from the public want to come forward and speak to this item? Seeing none, bring it back to the committee. Now we're at internal communications, administrative matters, future agenda items. Alicia?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm pleased to announce that as of this coming Monday, CAMPA will be fully staffed. We'll have a new transit coordinator on board starting Monday. I've hinted at a lot of things that are upcoming, and as we've gotten fully staffed, as Dan has gotten on board, we're really ramping up full speed on some of these work program items. We are working on this ADA transition plan, as you heard tonight. We have an upcoming amendment to our public participation plan. We've been working on our monitoring documents. And there's some other things we're working on. That said, next month, I don't want to meet just to meet. So at this time, I'm going to maintain the tentative date for next month. But if I don't have enough to bring you substantively, I may make a recommendation to cancel next month, CAMPA specifically.
Okay, number eight, item eight, board comments. I'll start on this side. Vida, do you have anything you'd like to say?
I'm glad to be here. Hello, everybody.
That's good enough. There's no work implied with any of that. So anything else? Nope. All right. Brad, Jan, John, Sandra.
This may be a first, but I don't think I have anything.
I was going to say the NDOT always has something.
I used up
to
all
share.
My talking points on the prior item, so I don't think we have anything.
Baby pictures.
You want a slideshow of baby pictures? I'd be happy to. Lucia probably has some as well.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that'll be your next agenda item on CAMPO. We'll see how that flies. So we're back to the next meeting scheduled tentatively for Wednesday, April 10th. This is the last chance we're getting from the public want to come forward to speak to anything on to CAMPO? Any matter? Seeing none, bring it back for a motion for adjournment, please.
So moved.
Brad? And RTC is going to start at?
Make it 25 till.
25 till, 6 o'clock. Thank you, everybody.
So this is under
delegated authority the Board of Supervisors gave that just isn't posted on the CNC boards and commissions. Because the 11th CNC is the board authority. Okay, so there's another one. No better. So we should just post that. So I think we should post that on there to see. So I'd say, hey, here's the commission or delegated authority.
Well, that's
I'm not going to write them. I'm sure. Thanks.
Ready on the left? Ready on the right? All right. I'd like to call to order this meeting of the Carson City Regional Transportation Commission. Today is Wednesday, March 13th, 2019. We are in the Sierra Room at the Carson City Community Center at 851 East William Street. Kathy, can you call roll, please?
Chairperson Bonkowski.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Kimbrough.
Here.
Commissioner Bagwell.
Here.
Commissioner McQuarrie.
Here.
Commissioner Stedford.
Here.
Thank you, Kathy. We're on agenda item number two, agenda management notice. The chair may take items on the agenda out of order, combine two or more agenda items for consideration, and or remove an item from the agenda or delay discussion relating to an item on the agenda at any time. Just in case you were all wondering if I was all powerful. Agenda item three, disclosures. Any member of the RTC board may inform the chair of his or her intent to make a disclosure of a conflict of interest on any item appearing on the agenda. Do we have any disclosures here tonight? I see none. We'll move on to the first public comment, agenda item number four. Is there any member of the public that would like to come up and speak at this time? And I see nobody approaching. So we will move on to agenda item number 5, 5A, for possible action to approve the February 13th, 2019 draft minutes. Has everybody had a chance to read the minutes? If so, I would entertain a motion.
I move to approve the minutes.
Second.
Yes,
you were looking for the date.
I was looking for the date, February the 13th, 2019.
There you go. I second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Passes unanimously. We're now on agenda item 6A for possible action, discussion, and possible action regarding recommending to the Board of Supervisors acceptance of the 60% design of the South Carson Complete Streets Project. Dan.
Thank you. Dan Stuckey, City Engineer, for the record. Good evening, Commission. I'm joined by Tom Grundy, the Project Manager with the City for the South Carson Project. Today we're going to go, I guess, basically step back. We were last year on November 14th, I believe was the date. So we're going to take a step back and kind of give you an update on what's happened between today and November 14th, tell you how the project has progressed. We'll also, you guys made multiple comments last time, and we want to go over each of those comments and show you how they're either in the process of being addressed or they have been addressed. So we'll go through those. And then I do have an updated set of the illustrative maps that we showed last time. We'll run through those. I mean, you guys know the project pretty well from last time, but we'll still run through them pretty quickly. But please stop me if you want to talk in more details about anything that you've seen, you see up there. And then, we'll end it with, a schedule update moving forward, kind of dates and important milestones and all that that's coming up in the future. And then the last thing I always like to take an opportunity when we get when we're in the public meeting setting is to show you the different communication tools. So you guys have all seen this before, but I think it's a great thing to get out there and show, get that out there and show what we're doing there. So we'll get started. So shortly after we were here on November 14th, we did have a public meeting on December 11th at the, Sheriff's, Ormsey Room over at the, public safety complex, very well attended. There was about 80 to 100 people likely there. You know, we got a lot of great feedback from the public. We essentially went through a similar presentation as we did with you all, but we also had, and you can see in the picture at the bottom, we had some maps that we printed out, large maps showing the project, and people were able to walk around, look at those maps. We had a lot of city staff and design staff and the contractor there to answer questions. So we felt like it was a very productive meeting. It's always good to get a great turnout. So we did that. 30% update, went to RAC on December 3rd, and then the Board of Supervisors on December 20th. One thing I wanted to point out, an important thing to mention here, is we did on January 10th meet with the Historical Resources Commission. And so, you know, with this project, we want to ensure that there's no adverse impacts to historical and cultural resources along the corridor. This project is basically within the existing roadway footprint, but that's part of the process of this project, is going through those steps. And one of those steps was meeting with the Historical Resources Commission, and they didn't seem concerned about the project at all. We have hired a consultant who's been on board for a couple months now to go through the NEPA process and the Section 106, which are those cultural, historical resources, environmental impacts. And so that's going on right now. As we speak. Design progression from 30 to 60. So I think the illustrative plans that you see probably won't show quite all of what's gone. Lots happened. Lots of design refinement, a lot on the utility side. So stuff that won't show up on those maps that you see, but we've really refined a lot of the storm drain design, water, sewer, electrical, irrigation, all of that. And then, you know, some grading, some geometry, street lighting, lots happened from between 30 and 60. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And then I do want to mention there's been lots of updates to the Carson Proud website. We put out an update, probably 2 or 3 weeks ago. And essentially if you guys haven't been to the carsonproud.com, IT, Rachel Schneider and IT has done a nice job of keeping that site looking nice and getting the information out there. It is a great spot to get a lot of information on the project. What we've been doing is essentially, like, after this meeting, we'll give an update on the discussion today with a link to the video. There's also an FAQ that we've kept current with the project based off these public meetings that we've had. We put a lot of those questions into our FAQ, so I think we're at about 20 or 25 questions now. So, again, it's a great resource for people that are interested in the project. There's also a flyover video. I was going to show it to you all today, but I didn't. I decided not to, but it's there for your viewing, and it's kind of gives a visual representation of what the project will look like in you know, once it's built. So another good resource. So now we'll go through the comments that we heard from you all last time. Just want to talk about that. I believe it was Mr. Sedfield that mentioned as far as the decel lanes and turn pockets, making sure that we're looking at that. We have done that analysis, and I've bulleted the four items that we're incorporating. They don't show up in the. We did that analysis kind of as the 60% was ending, but they will be incorporated into the design moving forward. So there's four of the locations. We're also looking at some driveway locations, potentially doing some modifications there. But you can, those are the big ones. I won't go over all those details, but there's a couple right turn pockets that we're adding, and then a couple extensions on left turn pockets as well to provide the adequate length there. So just wanted, that was a nice comment. That is being addressed. I believe Mr. Kimbrough talked about utilization of load plants for site distance, safety, business visibility. The concern there, at least what you expressed, and I think it was a really good comment. We have that multi-use path with the landscape buffer area and wanting to ensure when people are making those turns that they can adequately see who's using that multi-use path. Actually, I think before that meeting, we had already met with the landscape architect to discuss that concern, but thank you for the reminder on that. We walked the corridor. It's been being incorporated in the design, so that is definitely being taken into account. Stop signs at driveway. This is Mr. McQuarrie talked about this. Talking about when that multi-use path crosses driveway, if you have a lot of activity, ensuring that drivers are stopping. We have not added stop signs at the location. Per state law, they should yield to pedestrians. However, we are looking at making that crosswalk there where the path, multi-use path, comes across those driveways very distinctive, like green paint or some sort of pavement marking that makes it look like it's not just a normal crosswalk to cars there that are coming out. So I think that'll be a good solution for that. But again, we're evaluating this as we move forward. This is brought up, a northbound sweeping right at Stewart roundabout location encourages high speeds. I think Mr. Bonkowski and Mr. McQuarrie both brought that up. Very good point. I think there was concerns, and I'll talk about the roundabout in more detail. But the first, and you guys saw probably like a 5 or 10% design of the roundabout. But we were trying to keep that sweeping right on to Stewart there. That's been modified since. I'll show you the update, and we think it's a much safer design. And that was partly, it was a great suggestion, but it was partly just part of the design process to implement that in. Concerns about, this is Mr. McQuarrie had this comment, concerns about Indian multi-use path mid-block. And this is just, the detail wasn't there on that 30% design. The multi-use path, I think, going to the north ended before south of the Stewart intersection there. And I'll show you in the plans coming up that's been extended all the way to Stewart. So that's where that multi-use path will end. And then there was also some talk about, the cyclists that are using the multi-use path, if they want to take a lane into the roundabout, how that transition is going to look. And I think we didn't really have a lot of detail there. You're not going to see the detail in the exhibit here, but we are looking at that, making that very visible and safe and an opportunity and signage where a cyclist can get in there and take that lane going into the roundabout heading north. This one, I don't know. I don't think it was quite worded like that, but we have got this. I think it's a good point. People, I think, I'm the same way. When you first get into a roundabout, there's definitely some education that I think would be beneficial to the public on how to drive through roundabouts. We took this comment very seriously. We're actually actively working right now with Rachel Snyder and IT again to produce some educational We're doing a video. We have a really good video that other agency has used that we feel is really good. And we're kind of going to simulate that. And it's essentially, you know, the proper ways to use a roundabout. So we are looking into that and possibly passing out some educational material and also putting some stuff on the website, Carson Proud and social media. So just wanted to point that out. So here we'll get into 60% design. Again, I'm going to go through this pretty fast because this doesn't show like the real nitty gritty details of the design. But please stop me if you guys want to discuss anything. So here you can see we'll start at the south end of the project. This is Appian Way, so the NDOT right of way is right there, and that's where our project's going to take off from there. And you've already seen this. I will show on the top there is that the red line there is the multi-use path. So that throughout this exhibit, you'll see that red line. It starts on the west side of the roadway, which you all know, and that's because it ties into that NDOT multi-use path that already exists there on the west side.
Can I pick on in already on this first one?
Yeah.
Just for clarity. Well, this is because I read about all the development going on there in the future. So is there going to be attempts to make traffic use certain roadways down there where the light is versus Appian or all those things for all the commercial going down there and all the more traffic so that you're ahead of the plan?
Yeah. Versus behind? So I'll defer to Lushan to answer. We are actively looking at some options there and getting ahead of it. I'll let you talk about what we're doing.
That's a great question. Thanks for asking. So, you know, in light of all of the development up there, as you may know, staff have been asking any new permits that come in or permits that aren't approved yet, making sure that those developers and those traffic impact studies are reflecting the cumulative impact and the current scenario of what's being permitted and conceived up there. That said, we have received our first traffic impact study that does show anticipated need for a traffic signal at Appian. This is the first time where, you know, I think a lot of us have expected it. It's in the regional transportation plan as something in the future, but now we're getting to the point where it is a real thing. And so, you know, that said, it does remain unbudgeted, and we still need to figure out how to get the right of way if we are really wanting to realign Snyder to align with Appian. So in terms of the South Carson project, you know, at this part of the corridor, there's not a lot of changes that are happening. So what we're doing here with this design is setting ourselves up for the future and not ruling any improvements on the future out. Does that answer your question?
So I will move on. Any other comments you guys want to discuss on the sheet or no? Okay. So let's see here. We're over here. This is Clearview, Snyder to Clearview, and you can see the multi-use path again. I know you guys have seen this, but you can see it crossing over at Clearview, and then the remaining part of the project moving north, that multi-use path will be on the east side, and then there's the landscape buffer just to the west of that.
I do have a question. Yeah. On this one. So bicyclists going northbound up to Snyder, they got a bike lane. And then there's nothing between Snyder and Clearview where the multi-use path is on the east side. So they're stranded. And I think this came up at the public meeting, actually.
Tom Grundy with Carson City Public Works. You're referring to the northbound cyclists?
Yes.
Yeah, there's room on the shoulder, and then we're going to do sharrows until they get up to the multi-use path.
I don't see a shoulder on that drawing. I just see a lane. Or is that the whole? Because you got right-turning vehicles out of Snyder as three lanes, and it looks like the curb lane turns into a right turn into Clearview, but there's no facility for bicycles. I think you either need to somehow figure out how to squeeze a bike lane in that lot or have the multi-use path be on the east side as well as the west side from Snyder with some way for them to get on it.
Yeah, so we have had internal, you're right, it doesn't show up there, but we have had internal discussions and that we will provide a way for them to get to the multi-use path at Clearview. We'll probably cut back on the landscaping there and figure out a way to fit enough shoulder there to make
that it would better. Be the easiest solution. Yeah. Just, you know, move it over a little.
Yeah. 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 And yeah, it is in design. It just didn't make it onto this, but yes. And I should have, I think you commented on it at the 30%. So I apologize. I should have had it included.
Or I actually commented on it at the public meeting.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's 30%. Maybe that's where it is. Okay. Again, this is Clearview to Casino Fandango. Again, I already talked about the landscaping buffer, but you can see it there. Going to move forward. This is Casino Fandango to Kuntz. And I was just going to mention the street lighting again. I think I talked about this at 30%, but we're looking at a couple different options. We're trying to incorporate some of the downtown style street lighting north of Stewart Street, and then some of the Fairview street lighting between Stewart and Fairview, probably, and then some like your standard Cobra Head lighting south of Fairview. But we're still working out how all that layout's going to be. I mean, we have the layout, but as far as the and budget will be considered into that too. But I just wanted to point out the different street lighting options.
Yeah, can I ask you a question real quick?
Yes.
Where we have, say on sheet two here, where we have to Save Mart and Roventini, where we have the proposed median in that area, is it better to have the driveways or the streets coming in to be directed, you know, with a pork chop to be right out? You know, to keep them from, you know what I'm saying? So we do the same thing down at Appian. You know, we have the pork chop for.
That's a good point. We'll look at that.
Where we don't have a median, I don't see it being an issue. But, you know, I just, you know.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
No, it's good. We'll look into that. Moving on to sheet five, so here's the start of the frontage road here. Not a whole lot to add from the 30%, but be happy to talk about anything here through this stretch. This I do want to point out, this is sheet six. So between Kuntz and Colorado, there are no pedestrian crossings. It's a long stretch. I'm talking about east-west pedestrian crossings. So one of the things we've done in our public outreach meetings and internally with just engineering analysis and safety analysis, but look at potential locations for those mid-block crossings. They're not shown up here. And we gave the public a couple options, but these are where they're going to be. Where that red circle is, if you guys can see that. So that's the Applebee's location there. So, and how those are going to look is like a Danish Offset or a refuge island is what you also hear. So you'll have essentially kind of you'll be able to do it in two steps to cross that. And these will be the flashing beacon type style illuminated pedestrian crossings there. So I do think, I don't know off the top of my head how long of a stretch, but it's too long of a stretch, I believe, especially with the Complete Streets project, to not have some pedestrian crossings in there. So I just wanted to point that out.
And if you look at sheets five and six, on the top of the frontage road in the landscape median, there's a line that runs through. Is that the existing bike path that's going to be removed? It's just a dark, wavy line.
Oh.
It says remove existing.
That's the
rock. There's existing
sidewalk. Okay. So there's decorative rock. Yeah, so Supervisor Von Kowski, to answer your question, there's some decorative rock that they have kind of in a pattern there on the landscaping sheet. So that's there. But there's also, so I don't know which line you're looking at. That's the most distinct is the decorative rock. But there also is a path there that will be removed, correct?
Okay, so it may be like a dry stream bed type
yes,
of decorative rock.
Exactly.
Okay.
So sheet 7, again, we're still along the frontage road here.
One more question before we move on. Just keep in mind, too, that wherever the pedestrian crossing is, we talked last time at the 30% design, that there needs to be a pathway through the landscaping to get to the crosswalk.
Yep. So sheet 7, frontage road area. I'll probably move on from that unless anybody wants to talk about it. Sheet 8, just again, still the frontage road area. I did want to talk a little pavement. We're still, you know, it's looking like the majority of it will be a 2-inch mill and overlay for this project. However, we're looking specifically at different areas and making sure we might have to do more than that to make sure it's the right treatment. So we're evaluating that staff. We're working with the CMRS&C as well as the geotech engineer to figure out the best and most cost-effective options there. So I just wanted to point that out. This is sheet 9, so we're getting close to Colorado Street and the end of the frontage road here. And I've added another circle. We talked about another mid-block crossing there. And so it's not added yet here, but this is where it will be.
So will that change the median so that there's an island?
Yes. Yes. And then I think I pointed this out last time, but we do have some significant storm drainage improvements coming down. And I just pointed, it's not shown here, but it's kind of starting at Rose. We'll start to run a pretty large diameter storm drain pipe on the west side of the roadway up to around Stewart, where it'll discharge into that linear, the little green area, green space area there. So just for your information. Sheet 10, so this is by the Railroad Museum here. I don't really have a whole lot to talk about on it, but I'd be happy to answer any questions you all have.
Yeah, if we go back to sheet 9, which is in front of the National Guard property, right? Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So where's the access for their property going to be? Is that going to be off of Colorado?
So there's I wish I had a pointer. In the shaded back existing image there on the south part of the frontage road, there is a driveway there. It's just shaded back and you can't see. It's the existing driveway.
They'll have access off the frontage road and off of Colorado.
Is there?
I'm not sure if there's a driveway off Colorado.
I'm not sure there's
a driveway. I don't know. I don't think there is a driveway off Colorado.
Off Colorado?
I don't believe so. Currently, there's not.
Yeah, so we should look at that, because if they ever do develop that, then they're going to need 2 access points. So we should look at that now while we're in design.
I hear what you're saying. I'm just wondering if, because it's the Colorado access would be kind of outside the project limits.
Yeah.
Does it?
I get that.
Okay.
And it's not our property, but yeah. I'm just trying to be forward thinking.
Okay.
One other thought though is that driveway is offset from the turn into.
Yeah, that's.
The existing driveway. It's offset from what we're showing is the new.
The current tie-in. One? Yes. So we're realigning that to match up with roads.
Well, here again, it's not part of the scope, but I would think that driveway should be aligned with that access across from roads. You know what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying. So you're saying the existing driveway south of the frontage road that comes off of the south would be right. Realigned. Yeah. I hear what you're saying. I just, there's careful on the scope, you know, trying to figure all that out.
Totally understand.
Both of your comments are definitely, I think, very good comments. We got to be a little careful, but.
And since I have my mic on, I have another question for you. So we have some, like, right across here on roads, it looks like we're bringing our improvements, up roads and new, ADA ramps and such. We don't show the crosswalk on some of those, but we do on the east side.
Hmm.
I mean, it's there, but it's not as obvious as it is on the east side.
Yeah.
And then for the life of me, I can't picture it right now, but do we do a fair amount of thermoplastic in town here for striping?
We haven't done much.
Okay, and I think that's the right way, because as soon as you put a plow down, you're going to peel up all that thermoplastic.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of been we've looked into various options, and obviously we're including our operations people in those decisions, and I think that's kind of the feedback we've gotten as well, so.
Okay.
Any other questions on sheet 9? Good. Sheet 10, again, if you guys have any questions, we can definitely stop here, but I was going to keep moving.
Question in general, when you picked the two crosswalk locations, and then you're going to put islands in them, but is that based on where you see people crossing now, that it's the heaviest traffic because you didn't put it anywhere near the car dealers, and so you're not seeing people crossing the street between the car dealers on both sides as a heavy pedestrian area?
We felt like these were going to be the heavily used areas, and we, I mean, that's a really good point. I think that's part of the reason we, in those public meetings, we had a big plot map there showing, I think, 5 or 6 different locations. And the public provided that we thought would maybe make sense. I think a couple of them were across the dealership and they voted on that. And I think this location, I think, is good for the reason that you have that pretty, like the star, isn't this where the Starbucks is? Yeah. And there's some other, those shopping areas there and food. And then the other one with the Applebee's, it's kind of a similar type, setup there. So we felt, I mean, feel free to add anything more to that, but I think we felt like these were pretty good spots to make it happen.
Yeah. I would like to see you look at what my thinking is that northbound traffic off of Road Street turning to go north on South Carson Street, they pull out to make a left turn to go north, and they're accelerating, and they're going to be accelerating right into the pedestrian crosswalk. So I'm just wondering if the most appropriate place, this isn't like the best design, but maybe the safest would be to put the crosswalk on the south side of the intersection of Rhodes and South Carson, and then you'd have to put one across Rhodes Street too. But it just concerns me that you have traffic that is trying to get across 3 lanes of traffic, and they're accelerating right into the crosswalk.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. We'll look into it.
Do I recall saying that the speed limit was going to be reduced with the new construction? Because it's 45 in that area now, right?
Yeah, so there's no reductions happening south of Clearview. Between Clearview and Stewart, it'll be 35. And north of Stewart, it'll be 25. I think north of Stewart, it's already 25. Is it 35? Okay. Oh, okay. And Tom just said until you get to Reds, it gets to 25.
So it's reducing from what it is now.
That's what I thought, because I thought it was 45.
It's 45. I think Clearview, it gets 55, south of Clearview, something like that. But north of that, yes, it's getting reduced from 45 to 35 between Clearview and Stewart. And then between Stewart and Red, what's the cross street for Reds? 10th Street. That's 35 today. It'll be 25 north of that, it's 25 today, and it will remain 25. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm not going crazy.
So I'm at sheet 11 here. This is starting to get close to the roundabout, which we'll, I've got a slide on that, talk about. And I guess, Mr. McCurry, this is where you're, I guess, probably on the very right-hand side or north side of this figure, that transition point, I think, will be coming from the multi-use path to the road to allow cyclists to enter a roundabout if they choose to do so. So I was going to go to the roundabout. Unless you all want to go back. So here's some roundabout exhibits. I want to take you kind of through the progression because, like I said, I think we got Kimley Horn under contract like 2 weeks before we saw you in November. So they scrambled to even produce what they produced on the left-hand side of that screen. So you can see it's pretty conceptual. So this is what you saw last time. And this is, you can see that sweeping right, which I've highlighted with the red oval there, which brought up some concerns. The 20% design was produced in December, so they were able to progress it a little bit. And that's, I believe that's what was taken to the Board of Supervisors then. But this is the first time RTC's seen it. And you can see they tightened up the radius quite a bit on that right-hand turn. And then the multi-use path, you can see it coming all the way up to the Stewart intersection there. So just wanted to point out that change. There has been another change from this, and I'll show you on the next slide, but I want to point you to, it'll be on the west side of that 20% design figure. We had that bypass lane. And there's a couple reasons we've modified this. One is safety. Basically, you can take that pretty high speeds going through there because it's a straight shot. And we were a little concerned about safety so that was one of the reasons. The other reason is, and I think you all know this, we're looking for more connections to Curry Street, and we've looked at this location as that future possible fourth leg of that roundabout. And I think at the time we talked to you, talks have been going on for a while. I think they've progressed even more since then, and we think it could happen sooner than later, hopefully, with that connection. And I guess we wanted to set ourselves up so we're not having to go back in there. If it happens in 5 years, we're not going back in there and tearing up half of the intersection to make that happen, which we would have had to do with the bypass lane. So now I'm going to show you where we are today. And again, the roundabout design's a little bit behind. They're going to be catching up here soon, but they're still a little bit behind the rest of the design team. But here is essentially the 30% is what I'll call it, and this is basically where we are today. So you can see instead of having that bypass, southbound bypass lane, we've combined them. So it's essentially like a multi-lane roundabout there. Now the most westerly lane will still have to go south through there. But this, again, avoids us having to get, we can just modify, and you can see on the right-hand side, that's, we're starting to look at that future connection to Curry. It won't be built with this project, but we want to be forward thinking and make sure that we're not just a cost standpoint, but impacting the public greatly in the future if that were to happen. So I wanted to show that. I want to point out, and this kind of goes back to the outreach, multi-lane roundabouts are a little bit, it's a little bit more difficult than a single lane as far as driving through it and getting used to it. But there's a lot of really effective ones all over Northern Nevada. We think that proper signage and striping is key. And Kimley Horn's designed a lot of roundabouts. They know what they're doing. They'll do a good job with this. And we also talked about the outreach that we're doing as well to educate the public. And we're not going to just do it. We don't really have any multi-lane roundabouts in town, but we're going to do some outreach for an education on multi-lane roundabouts as well. So I think we've got a good plan moving forward on that. And I think this is definitely the way to go to make sure in the future we don't set ourselves up, we set ourselves up well. So,
Dan, do you know if one of the potential designs would include a rumble strip between the two southbound lanes? Because I know you can't put, you know, we brought the two lanes back together. Yeah. You can't put a curb between them.
Yes.
Because that would be a hazard. But a rumble strip would at least keep people in their lanes.
Yeah. I mean, we'll definitely, we've got a meeting actually. Well, we have meetings every Monday on this project, but the roundabout will be the focus point of that discussion. We'll definitely bring that up.
Dan, I don't see on the 30% design where the bicycles go. I mean, there's no bike lane. I mean, there's a bike lane southbound north of the roundabout, and there's a bike lane southbound south of the roundabout, but there's no, it looks like they're just supposed to merge into the lane.
So there's no bike lanes in the roundabout, and that's standard, pretty standard design.
Yeah, it.
but we do have.
Yeah, it's not good for bicyclists. And going northbound, there's no way you can get, there's no way you can get there, unless you take, you can't get off the bike path going north to get onto the lane until you get to that little, where it ends with that little turnaround. And even then you can't get to go north unless you go across all the crosswalks.
So there, when I was talking about south of where this picture is, we have a transition point that will be signed where the cyclists who are on the multi-use path will be able to come off a ramp and get and take a lane at that point, which is shown, which will be south of where this screen is shown.
Somewhere around the Office Depot? Because you're leaving the bike lane, wherever you do that.
North of Office Depot.
Is there a gap then in the sheets? There is a gap, isn't there? I mean... So we can't really see. There's a bit that is not in the view in these sheets.
And
so.
This doesn't show, and that's kind of what I was trying to say earlier, is this doesn't really reflect that, but we are giving that opportunity for those cyclists to take a lane, not just at this, the little, at Stewart Street, I guess.
And then that sort of makes sense. And then on the 30% design, there's what looks like a, sort of a little bike lane transitioning from the right-hand lane to the left-hand lane going north. Is that what that is? It's like a little mini gore. Oh,
I can use, thanks, Dirk. Yeah, I can use my mouse. This makes a lot easier. You're talking about this.
That thing there, yeah.
It's hard to see. I believe that is what that is. And we're looking at, we'll probably mark that as well. Maybe with some green paint or something there to distinguish what that is as well.
Yeah.
We're just not there yet with the design. Yep.
Okay.
And then to answer your question on the southbound lane, it's really hard to see here, but there's basically a point, I think it's around here where you could get, there's a ramp here. So basically the cyclists will be able to go and access this to come around and then join up back down here.
Yes, that some might and some won't.
Oh, yeah. Well, and then, yeah, exactly. They'll have the option to take the lane, but they'll also be able to get off safely at that point there. So,
and then that dumps back out to the bike lane on the south end of the roundabout, correct? You see the little leg that comes out on the bottom, right above where the red... rectangle is, go to the other, go left, go down,
south.
Go down,
oh, right there, here.
Right there.
Yes, yep.
So they can just make a little diversion so that they're not in the lanes through the roundabout.
Yep.
Okay.
Any other questions on the roundabout? So here's moving north of Stewart Street near the Carson Mall. And again, this is the roundabout kind of serving as that transition point into more of a, I guess, downtown type feel, or a little different type of a corridor. It's almost kind of two separate projects in a way as far as the feel, I think. But here's where kind of that transition is happening. And the multi-use path is stops at Stewart Street, too, just to be clear on that. And then I'm on sheet 14 now, so north of the mall. And again, there's a lot of storm drain utility improvements happening along this stretch as well that are not shown here, but significant improvements there. And then you see here on the it'll be the east side of the roadway is where we'll be doing some of those parking pull-out pockets, as well as widening some of the sidewalks there, some landscaping. So that's what's going on there. And then that continues up until Fifth Street. So that's the end of the plans. I was going to get into the schedule moving forward unless you guys want to talk some more about design. Okay. So design milestones here, May, June timeframe, probably more likely June for 90% design. And then final will happen in the July, August timeframe. And so there's those dates. We do have another public meeting / workshop coming up. It'll be April 12th. We're calling it a project workshop, and it's going to happen over at the Brick. And essentially what that's going to look like is we'll block out probably the afternoon on, I think that's a Friday, and we'll have various design team members there throughout that period with plans, and whoever's interested, we're going to put out a lot of stuff on social media, advertising, marketing, or whatever for this event to try to get people to come on down, and we'll be able to discuss any details that they wish at that meeting. So it's a little more intimate, not the right word, but a little bit more of a setting where we can, you know, if they want to talk real specifics, we can definitely do that.
Actually, I have a question on that, on utilizing the Brick for that public meeting. It doesn't have great parking. So while it may be a smaller, conducive site, it's not conducive for the public to have anywhere to park.
We haven't sent out any advertising. Okay.
So, I mean, we can look into it. You know, if you really want the public to attend, I don't think that's the best location. If you're only expecting that you'll have 20 or 30 people, then we can use the Nuggets parking lots. But otherwise, there's insufficient parking. I just want to let you know. I'm in the Brick building all the time.
We can parking. We can look at the location. We need to get that information out soon, so we need to make a decision. I know we have reserved the big conference room downstairs for that. So we'll look into it. It depends on if we can get another location in time, but I mean, I think that's a decent point. So we'll definitely look at it. Board and committee updates. So you can see, you know, RAC, RTC, Board of Supervisors. April, we go 60% design update. I just found out actually today that RAC's not having an April meeting. So we'll likely go to RAC, I guess, in May, and then the board and April, and then June, July is where we would come back to you here and to the other committees there for the 90% design update. And then just a little update on construction. We plan on, the construction contract would be, completed, you know, late fall, winter, or, you know, before the end of 2019, probably the construction team would start mobilizing the end of 2019 and start like very first thing in January with the utility work, get going on that. And the way we're starting to get those details now about how they're going to build this project, which is kind of, this is, I think from an engineering standpoint and construction standpoint, this is where the project starts to get really fun and exciting from 60 to 90, because a lot of stuff is happening. So it's going to be a busy 3 or 4 months here. But we're planning on a construction duration of somewhere between 9 and 12 months. But again, we're working all that out right now. And then I'll just end it with these project communication tools. Again, carsonproud.com, tons of information there. We do have this text subscription service. You can text Carson Proud to 31996, and then it gives you automatic, updates on the project. It's a really good tool. I think a lot of people have signed up for that. Social media, we're doing updates. And then Tom, his information is there. So those are some of the ways you can stay connected. And with that, we can open it up to any additional questions.
Lewis, do you have public comment? Yeah, come on up.
I'm Lewis Lem. I'm here as a resident of Carson City. I just happen to work for NDOT. So I'm sorry, I'm catching up. I did see the public meeting notice. We sort of talked around it. I'm sorry, I haven't. So my question is mostly just about if I could ask the rationale for the mid-block pedestrian crossings. I might have missed some of this as compared with the end of block. So I'm sort of following. I'm not super familiar, but I'm following, in the downtown area, other places there are mid-block crossings. I'm just sort of at a certain point, though, you made a judgment to say to move to mid-block crossings versus end-of-block crossings. Can you kind of explain the thought process, the rationale?
Yep. Tom Grundy, Public Works. That's a good question. Our rationale with going to the mid-block crossings was we wanted to remove a lot of the median islands to create better business access. And so if we put crossings at the intersections, we can't put a refuge island for pedestrians because then that would block the left turn access at the streets. So we did the mid-block crossings. That way we can have a refuge island and still maintain left turns for businesses. If you go to one of the sheets, you can see.
Yeah, no, I see. I get what you're saying. It's in my experience, it's not my area, but in my experience, I haven't seen too many of these mid-block crossings. In some ways, it seems to me a little counterintuitive, like to have the mid-block crossings when the speeds are accelerating. You know, like the mid-block crossings where you're in a more urban area and the traffic is used to slowing down and stopping for pedestrians anyway at the end of blocks. Now you have mid-block crossings, where the speeds are going up to 35, 45, as you're indicating. I'm just sort of wondering about the conflicts and the safety of the pedestrians as the car drivers are starting to think about heading south and moving faster or coming north and starting out faster. And what maybe you have thought about the treatments, the safety treatments. Maybe that's the other side of it.
Well, I think just to kind of go back on, I think you bring up some good points about it being a little bit of a higher speed corridor than what you would see downtown. And I think that's part of the reasoning why we want these mid-blocks is because we thought having a two-step crossing was important to be able to make that and have that refuge island in the middle when you probably wouldn't need that like in a downtown type scenario.
Right.
So I
get that part.
Yeah.
So I guess what kind of signals would the drivers get? Like if they're not used to having to slow down in such a long mid-block, like what do you anticipate the drivers, what would make them aware then that they might, and is this an actuated pedestrian crossing or is it how would the pedestrians indicate and what elements of that intersection would in a sense, reduce the potential conflict between the cars and that's really my question. Yeah.
Well, obviously the crosswalks will be striped, but we'll also be using flashing beacons at those crosswalks where the pedestrian can push a button and activate a signal and then the lights start flashing. Kind of like we have at Stewart, on Stewart Street by the State Library. It'll be a system like that.
So you do have, it's not just not shown in the pictures, but you do have anticipated sort of planned safety design into the design elements at the mid-block.
Yes.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Lewis. Is there any additional public comment? Is there any additional questions from the commissioners? Go ahead, Mark.
You've done such a great job of communicating all this. Are there any businesses for all this whole stretch that have come in and said they're not happy with any part of the plan? It seems like no. Everything's been handled, it looks like.
Yeah, it's funny. We were just talking about that the other day because we, and I reported on this last time, we visited, I think, roughly 250 businesses back in October. We actually walked the corridor. We broke up into teams and introduced ourselves and talked about the project. We sent out a letter beforehand explaining the project. And, I mean, I think maybe five people had some negative comments about it, but it was usually mixed in with positive comments. You know, and I think a lot of people, you know, they wanted to make sure that people could access. I mean, it's a nice, because it's a bigger corridor, I think we'll be able to keep traffic moving pretty well through it. So people are going to be able to get to these businesses just fine during the construction. So I think that was kind of a relief for them to hear. But I mean, a lot of people are excited about, you know, beautifying the corridor and changing, transforming it, you know, from less of a state highway to more of something that, you know, fits the needs of a lot of different types of users and looks nice. And I think this project will do that. So they were happy.
That's really good. If you keep that many people happy, through the whole process, that's great. You should pat yourself on the back for this process working so well.
Greg? I do have one recommendation. It would probably be easier for us to provide better feedback if we got the design maps in either a ledger or legal size and got them before the meeting.
I figured you might have that comment, and I apologize for that. We'll get that to you for the 90%.
Thank you very much. All right. If there's no other questions or public comment, then I will bring this back to the commission and look for a proposed motion.
I move to recommend to the Board of Supervisors acceptance of the 60% design of the South Carson Complete Streets project, and that the comments from today be looked at for the 90%.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Passes unanimously. We will move on to item 6B for possible action, discussion and possible action regarding determining that Sierra Nevada Construction is the lowest responsive and responsible bidder under NRS Chapter 338 and awarding Sierra Nevada Construction Contract Number 1819-184, District 1 Pavement Preservation Project for a base bid of $784,634.50 plus a 10% contingency amount of up to $78,463.45 for a total not to exceed amount of $863,097.95 to be funded from the RTC and sewer accounts as provided in the fiscal year 19 budget. And who's taking this one? Is it you, Dan?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think you read most of it. This is our slurry projects, District 1 for the year, College Parkway, Roop Street, Hot Springs Road, Arrowhead Drive. We did some striping modifications to align with our complete streets policy there along College Parkway and Roop Street. There is a sewer trench. About 15 to 20 years ago, we put in a sewer pipe along College Parkway. And we've had problems with the sewer trench ever since. And what's happening is it's a failure of basically the backfill. It was not done the way it should have been done, I guess. And so we've had, and that affects not only the sewer underneath, but it also can affect the roadway pavement. And so this is really an artifact, I guess, of that sewer project that was done 20 years ago. And so we have roughly, I don't know what the number, $200-some thousand in there to basically We looked at a couple different options with a geotechnical engineer as far as having to dig up all of that and redo the backfill, or do like a geogrid type stabilization where they basically take off the top like 2 feet and then do a geogrid, which helps distribute the loads and stabilize the trench underneath. And then we can put the new patch back on top and hopefully get a lot of good longevity out of it. So that's kind of a unique part of this slurry project that I just wanted to clarify there. The other thing I wanted to talk about is the green paint, which was put in here as a bid alt. I think, Lucia, I haven't been to the last couple RTC meetings, but I believe she's briefed you on we're hoping to try out some green paint around the area, see what holds up. And we wanted to do that with this project. You can see that the prices were pretty high there, and we weren't able to accept. I do want to point out, we noticed after the bids came in that we actually, the quantity there should be square feet, not linear feet. And usually that gets caught early on, and sometimes the people that are bidding on it will point it out, but essentially it's resulting in about four times the cost of what it should be. And so if we did have that unit right, we think we'd be able to afford it. But so, you know, wish that wouldn't have happened, but those things happen. You know, we put a lot of these projects out, and but anyway, it happened. What we think is the cleanest way to do is, I mean, obviously not award the bid or the bid all, but as the project goes and you know, striping's the last piece, if contingency's going well, we think that we can afford with a change order under the contingency funds and possibly incorporate that green paint into the project. So I just wanted to point that out to you all here, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Question then, if you're trying to accomplish the alternative, did the project have enough funding to like give you a 15% contingency, which would allow you the room? I don't know if you had enough money in the project lines. Do you see what I'm saying there? That instead of a 10% contingency, we could authorize slightly higher to allow you to, if it's feasible to do the...
To ensure that we can do it.
That you have enough, if you have enough money in the budget lines.
Yeah, we don't have authorization to go over 10% unless it comes back here for approval.
Unless we authorize it here in the first place.
I feel like there's a pretty high probability that we'll be able to do it. With these projects, usually they're pretty straightforward for the most part. Stuff can always happen, but I do think we'll be able to do it with this. Did you want to add something, Lucia?
Just to add, I think our intent with the green paint on this specific project was to use this opportunity as a test. There's some high conflict areas. We come out of the Walmart and underneath the I-580 right there. But we did propose, in the bid docs, of a fairly large swath of green paint. I think we could achieve what we set out to achieve as almost like a pilot with a smaller quantity. From my perspective and looking at the budget for fiscal year 19, I'd be hesitant to recommend additional funds, though I appreciate the question, for the green paint, just because we still have a slurry seal on College Parkway and a reconstruction on Gonai as part of District 1 that we're trying to squeeze in with the same budget. So my preference is to make sure we have enough funds for those other projects first.
Dan, do you have an estimated adjusted unit price based on the square foot cost rather than the lineal foot cost? I know you mentioned it was that this number is like four times higher, so does that mean it's going to be around $10 to $12 instead of?
Brian Elder, Carson City. See, I ran the numbers, and I think they came out to around a little over 30,000. So, yeah, if you just decrease that, I think it's the first two alternate items by four, then it came in right over 30,000.
So in order to make the alternate bid item work, we're not looking at 104 to 110,000. We're looking at more in the 30, 35,000. Yeah. Okay.
Which our contingency should cover, and I don't see as,
Are there any additional questions from the commissioners on this item? Go ahead.
Is this, you know, I know there's different sorts of green paint, right? And some are can be very slick, and some are more have more friction. So I just wanted to make sure that is this type of paint, has it been used elsewhere than we're happy with it? Are there other jurisdictions found it to be suitable?
So this is a, and Brian might be able to help me out with the product. What we spec'd there was MMA is what the product's called, and it's not your typical paint. I think it is a little more friction. I mean, it's the reason why we chose spec'd it out is because we wanted something that's going to have some longevity there. And we didn't like the thermoplastic option. And we thought the green paint, we didn't want to be out there all the time repainting it. So we thought this was a good product. And based on feedback, we did a little research on it. And based off feedback that we heard, we think it's a good product. But we'll see. I mean, hopefully we can do it with this and see what it how it performs over the next couple of years. But we think it's a good product.
Yeah, I mean, I know they've used it in Washoe, for example, and Reno, so it might be worth just checking in with them to see what they actually used and if they're happy with it.
And I believe, I believe we did, that was part of that communication as was with Washoe and some of our neighboring agencies, and we did receive good feedback on it.
Okay, thank you.
And I'll just add, Brian Elder again, we have used it in a really small area here in Carson. I believe it was like 10 years ago, and it's holding up pretty well. We don't have it in a really high traffic area, but we have used it. So,
yeah, my concern is not only that it hold up, but that it not be really slippery. Because if you're riding a bicycle and you go over some of the white stripes when they're wet, I mean, never mind icy, I mean, they're slick. And if you have a 4-foot bike lane that's basically a skating rink, whenever it gets wet, that's not a good choice of material to put down.
Yeah, and again, I think it's a common enough product, and I think we've got enough good feedback about it based off our research. I'm pretty confident that I think it'll work well, but we'll see. I mean, we'll test it out and see.
Any additional questions? Is there any public comment on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring this item back to the commission for a motion.
I move to determine that SNC is the lowest responsive and responsible bidder pursuant to NRS Chapter 338 and to award SNC contract number 1819-184 District 1 pavement preservation project for base bid of $784,634.50 plus a 10 cent.
You definitely can't do green paint. Sorry.
That'd be a little tight. Plus a 10% contingency amount of up to $78,463.45 for a total, I'm sorry, not to exceed amount of $863,097.95 to be funded from the RTC and the sewer accounts as provided in the fiscal year 19 budget.
Second.
We have a motion and we have a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Vote is 5-0. All right, we will move on to agenda item 6C for possible action. Discussion and possible action regarding the approval of an agreement with Crispin Porter and Bogusky LLC on behalf of Domino's Pizza, accepting a donation in the amount of $5,000 to pay for filling potholes and agreeing to participate in Domino's Pizza's Paving for Pizza program. Darren.
I was about to say good morning. It's still evening. This is pretty this is pretty self-explanatory. Clearly, some of our residents are putting their telephone to good use and their internet. They nominated Carson City to this program for Domino's. We've all seen the commercials, I'm sure. So we were selected to get this money, this donation. Paving for pizza, and so we will be fixing some potholes, some bad streets. They'll use it for promotional and future endeavors that they have in this program. But it's pretty straightforward for us, and we're happy to take any money we can get.
Todd, has the DA's office looked at the agreement, and are there any concerns with the imaging clauses or marketing clauses?
We did look at the contract and did have some concerns about them. We added a few clauses into the contract to specify that Domino's couldn't portray Carson City as approving Domino's or, you know, disapproving anybody else in any way, shape, or form. And we're also satisfied with the provisions about the approval process where Domino's is going to provide their materials to the city to review and approve prior to advertising.
And they can't imply that Carson City is full of potholes?
Correct.
Any questions from the commissioners?
I thought this was a chance, some creative chance to get a few dollars, but for support from the private industry for potholes in this community, and it was just amazing. It was from a pizza company. And I thought your impact was pretty minimal. I thought you'd make you put Domino stickers on the trucks or something when you got done for $5,000, but it's pretty minimal. So it's just one more little teeny tiny success story how to get private industry involved with your city streets. So somehow we need to applaud that very well.
Just to help me understand or to make sure on something, on the confidentiality clause, the city will not disclose the terms of this agreement to any third parties. Is there any, how are we not violating that?
Well, it says unless required by law.
I did specifically look at that, and they did have that unless required by law, and which I interpret as driving the entire statute through.
So, okay, because to me it's like, well, that's kind of an X, big X through that.
Fully aware that we were bringing this to this commission.
Okay. Yes. It's pretty standard language in the non-disclosure agreements that we see as well. Darren, any concerns with the contract?
I'm eating a lot of Domino's pizza these days. I'm good with it.
You probably did all the votes, maybe.
I see lunch for staff. Lunch for staff coming down the road. All right, any public comment on this item? I see nobody approaching, so I'll bring this back to the commission for a motion.
I move to approve the agreement with Crispin Porter and Bukowski LLC to accept the donation from Domino's Pizza to pay to fill potholes in Carson City for an amount of $5,000.
Second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Passes unanimously. And Darren, if you can relay our thanks when you accept the check and tell them that we'd be happy to accept more money if they want to give it to us. Okay, we are now on agenda item 7, internal communications and administrative matters. We will start with item 7A, Transportation Manager's Report. Lucia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In an effort to prolong this meeting, I have quite a few items for you this evening. So bear with me. And
remember, I can take items off the agenda.
Yes, sir. You just let me know. Give me the eye if you're ready for that. So the first item is the Douglas County Pavement Survey. This is more of a CAMPO item, but just making you aware, on February 26th, CAMPO staff executed a contract with Applied Pavement Technologies for an amount not to exceed $25,139. This is for work outlined in the Unified Planning Work Program for CAMPO Task 5.1, which is the Maintain the Pavement Management System. The survey will cover all of the roads within the CAMPO portion of Douglas County, including the local roads, using a similar methodology to what we did here in Carson City in fall of 2017 for our pavement survey. Staff did have a meeting with a kickoff meeting with a contractor, and Douglas County staff were present, and the project's expected to be completed in the next couple of months. So we're really excited about that partnership, and all of that data will be integrated with Carson City's pavement management system. So we're building this regional asset management tool. The second item on my manager's report is related to the portion of Center Drive, which is within Douglas County. This is down off of Topsy Lane. Resolution number 1971-R-5 was approved by the Carson City Board of Supervisors in 1971. At that time, the resolution formalized maintenance responsibilities of this portion of Center Drive to be assumed by Carson City at the sole cost to Carson City. And this was due to the road's proximity to some Carson City residents that were down there south of the county line. And this was their only means of access or egress into the county. Since then, due to regional development patterns that have occurred, Center Drive is no longer the only road available to Carson City residents. And thus, it's no longer necessarily serving the best interests of Carson City residents. So staff are bringing a new resolution to the Carson City Board of Supervisors, expected to occur on April 4th for consideration, which would supersede that old resolution. We have been in discussions with Douglas County staff. They're aware of this and so far have not opposed this action. But there is a fiscal impact to the streets maintenance fund and staff time. Third item, you may be aware, you may be waiting with bated breath. It is National Bus Driver Appreciation Day on Monday, March 18th. So, you know, bus drivers, they do more than just drive the Jack Transit buses. They go above and beyond. They help our residents get to critical destinations. They improve quality of life. It's an amenity that people use and really appreciate. So if you happen to see a bus driver next Monday, give them a hug or a high five and thank them for all they do. Here in Carson City, we'll be having an appreciation luncheon for our drivers that day. And so we really want to make them feel appreciated.
Lucia, before you go on,
sure.
Going back to the previous item, and you said there's a fiscal impact, but for us that would be a positive fiscal impact.
Absolutely, okay. A positive.
I just wanted to be clear.
A positive fiscal impact
is really to Douglas County more than to us.
Yes, a net gain for us.
Okay, and then also just be careful about the hugs to bus drivers. We don't want to get any.
Or high fives. I get.
High fives are good.
Appreciate the comment. Thank you. Following up on Driver Appreciation Day next Monday, Nevada Moves Day is next Wednesday, March 20th. This is a statewide event that was started in 2010 to celebrate the fun and benefits of walking and bicycling to school. The event encourages K through 8th grade students, school staff, and families to get physically active. Here in Carson City, there will be two events that day, both starting at 7:45 a.m., one is the annual walk from the Governor's Mansion to Bordwick Brae, generally attended by the Governor, Western Nevada Safe Routes to School, NDOT, and all those good things. It's usually highly publicized. The second event begins at Fire Station 52 off of Stewart Street, going over to Fremont Elementary. So we encourage, you know, families and students to get out there and participate in those events that day. It's Wednesday, March 20th, and they're really really great looking t-shirts with the logo and everything that we'll be giving out to participants. The next item, Carson City has received notification that the grant application period has been opened for the Nevada Aging and Disability Services Division. So this is the ADSD grants that we use. Our application is due April 3rd, and Jack Transit is eligible to apply for the same amount that we have received the last 2 years, which is $50,000 annually. This $50,000 partially underwrites the cost of our senior bus pass program, which provides unlimited free Jack Transit rides for seniors. ADSD has reported that they'll be moving to a competitive application process in fiscal year 2021. Therefore, this year is the third year funding round of what was initially advertised as a two-year funding program. So same criteria as we had last year. We expect to get awarded. I probably just jinxed myself, but we will be submitting an application for that. It's a really great program. We provide over 75,000 individual trips, free trips to seniors every year on the Jack system. So that's a really, really good thing, and we're really excited for that. And the final item on my manager's report, as you are aware, February was a heavy storm month. Those storms really did a number on our roads, and in particular, we ended up with many, many potholes. We received a lot of phone calls about the potholes, and since the reporting period for the street operations report and a couple items, it lags, I did want to report that our crews applied 250 50-pound bags of material for a total of almost 13,000 pounds of material to potholes in February alone. We're pretty sure it's a record, though I wasn't able to confirm that, but it was a lot. Our crews are spread really thin. They're tired. They're ready for spring, but they're doing a good job. They're out there every day, and I wanted to give them some credit on the record. So that concludes my items tonight, but I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Questions? You're good. Moving on to 7B, Street Operations Activity Report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't go too much into this report, but on the backside, page 2 at the bottom, show the weather events that have occurred. And, of course, this is delayed, so this is for activities as of January. We have had, snow and ice and rain events, and there's some information about, brine applied and some other things. So happy to answer any questions you have.
Any questions on the Street Operations Activity Report? Well, you've batted 1,000. Moving on to Project Status Report.
Again, I'll go over this rather briefly, but if you have questions, just interrupt me. The South Carson Street Complete Streets Project, you received an update from the city engineer this evening. The freeway multi-use path to Colorado, we continue to make progress, and we're at 90% design right now. And so we're looking at going out for construction next summer. The Fairview Drive Reconstruction Project, this project is no longer on hold. Water funds have been prioritized. An agreement with NDOT is in development and is being reviewed by our district attorney's office. Due to the contributing water funds, the board may be executing the final agreement. That's some direction that we've received. And we hope to bring that agreement to the May RTC meeting. The Kings Canyon Trailhead project.
Can you back up to the last one? And what changed on this project that prioritized the water funds?
Dirk may know more than I know.
The reason why I was on hold is I just believe things were shaking out from a fiscal year 19 budget standpoint. And as we identified it as a priority in order to reconstruct Fairview, there's a lot of sufficient time to examine the fiscal year 19 budget and sufficient funds existed. So that's why we took it off hold. And the water funds, correct. Thank you.
Thank you. On the Kings Canyon Trailhead project, staff did receive some preliminary design plans. These were pretty conceptual, but they were related to the parking circulation up at the trailhead. We did provide comments back. And we expect 30% design plans pretty soon in the next few weeks. As it has been, the Stewart Street PED signal project has been on hold through the winter, but we expect that'll pick up once it gets warm enough. The CDBG College Parkway Improvements Project, our staff have picked up, and really the design is almost complete. This week we were working with the SHPO office to get through all the clearances needed to get this out to bid, probably in the next month. The Freeway Multi-Use Path Project to Edmonds Sports Complex. This has been incorporated into the TIP. The kickoff meeting with NDOT is scheduled for next week, and we're looking forward to start design on that. The Airport Road Sewer Replacement Project. This is in design, and a construction agreement with NDOT is under development and being reviewed by our district attorney's office. The contract for the District 1 Payment Preservation Projects Part 1 was approved this evening, so staff will be looking forward to getting that on the schedule to happen this spring and summer. Also in District 1 is the Gonay Road Reconstruction Project. The design for that, the roadway portion, has been completed. Due to the availability of utility funds, I believe it's water funds, but Dirk, correct me if I'm incorrect. This project will be extended, is planned to be extended south through the Arrowhead intersection to take care of some of those, there's a needed utility component that we're going to include this project to save the city on an extra set of mobilization costs. On packet page 86, as part of the complete streets improvements, we have looked at street lighting. There's two locations where staff are recommending street lighting, and we're working with the utility companies for that. And that concludes the project status report. Happy to answer any additional questions.
Questions on the project status report? Go ahead.
Lucia, I'm not sure I heard you right. The Colorado multi-use path, that's going to go to construction this summer. Is that right? Not next summer. It's coming this year, 2019.
This coming 2019, excuse me. Yeah. I believe so. Is that correct, Art?
I believe so, yes.
I'd heard there was an issue with right-of-way with NDOT, and that was potentially holding it up. Is that getting resolved?
Dirk Warren, for the record, we are working through the right-of-way issues. It has to do with this kind of a span of control for the freeway, so FHWA is getting involved to some extent, and NDOT is getting involved. We have Stephanie Hicks, our real property manager, involved. And what we're trying to do is also make sure that this is something that we can mimic for the next part of the path that's going to Edmonds. But we got enough folks involved, and I think we're all on the same page. So right now, I'm not seeing any problems.
Okay. Thank you. And I had a second question regarding the Kings Canyon trailhead improvements. I understand that Parks is not entirely happy with the layout of the parking at the trailhead that the Federal Central Lands Design Office had sent. I just want to give you a heads up on that so that they may be coming back with some other ideas. Their concern is it's going to be close to somewhere between a 30 and a 40-foot cut on the uphill side of that, or the way it's proposed, which is going to be this huge scar in the hillside and very visible. And they're trying to find ways to minimize the disturbance of dirt.
Dirk Warren, for the record, we've had discussions with Parks and also with the U.S. Forest Service. We had discussion that we had some thoughts that came in from our Parks Department a little bit late in after the scoping process that involved moving the trailhead farther down the road. We did talk with the U.S. Forest Service. They weren't supportive of that move. It was going to involve quite a bit of outreach, and it could have a higher cost to it. So after we had that discussions with the U.S. Forest Service, the thought was to leave that the trailhead parking area where it is. There will be a cut. We are going to try and minimize it. We have provided those comments to Central Federal Lands. Some of this might involve moving part of the parking lot to the southeast side of Kings Canyon Road. And then also the other part is also kind of looking at erosion control and revegetation afterwards. And so we are looking at how to minimize the cut into the landscape.
Does that include looking at, as you said, revegetation? I've also seen concrete block or riprap used, or kind of a faux rock concrete application. Are they looking at those kinds of designs, or are they just trying to figure out how to minimize the scarring of the dirt?
At this, you know, state of the game with 30%, I think right now the plan is to minimize the cut. But as we progress, I think you're absolutely right that if we do have a cut in the landscape into that slope, we will be looking at to minimize it, you know, from an appearance standpoint. And from our experience with the Sierra Vista Lane, Central Federal Lands is, you know, they are open to these type of strategies, and you know, they've proven to be a good resource in that regards.
Additional questions? Is there any public comment? I see none. Okay, future agenda items.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Western Nevada Safe Routes to School in Carson City, we put out a request for qualifications for what we were calling the Safe Routes to School Safety Review Studies. We did receive four proposals for these studies, and we do intend to bring a contract forward in April to award that. We're also working on, the Safe Routes to School is working on an interlocal agreement with NDOT to use NDOT's fleet of e-bikes as part of the Safe Routes to School curriculum. So we're looking at trying to bring that to you as well next month. Those will be the two big items. In addition to the FY20 budgets, which Darren Schultz reminded me of earlier this evening. So that will be coming as well.
Any future agenda items from the commission members?
Can I have a question?
You can.
Do you know where Carson City stands on e-bikes for regulations and use on bike paths and roadways and sidewalks so that all that ties together with their training?
That's a loaded question, Mr. Vice Chair.
Very loaded, actually.
staff are looking. We've initiated a code review and update process to make sure that we're planning ahead for if a bike share, like an e-bike or some other scooter company or something, comes to town. But at this point, our e-bike policy follows the same state law for the regulation of those types of devices.
Since Washoe is going through this process now and they are not having particularly good experiences, are we keeping an eye on any proposed ordinances that they're bringing forward, as well as which companies they're, you know, having good experiences with and which ones they're not? Because I think they are on their second or third company now.
We are keeping an eye on it. We are also keeping an eye. I know that Bird is, and maybe Lime as well, are lobbying heavily at the legislative session this month and next. So we'll see what comes out of that. Lime did make an announcement that they're pulling out of the bike game. And so I think they're moving to scooters only. It'll be interesting to see where the industry goes if there is a business model that works. But for us here in Carson City, you know, we need to be prepared that we may be asked to bring them here. And so staff are trying to be proactive and look at our code and say, well, what would that look like and how would we enforce what we want to enforce? So we're working on that in the background.
Any other future agenda items from any of the commission members? Okay. Then we will move on to agenda item 8, board comments. Do we have any board comments? Greg? Lori? Mark?
No.
Next meeting is tentatively scheduled for 4:30 p.m. Wednesday, April 10th, 2019, right here in this room, the Community Center at 851 East William Street. This is the last opportunity, Ann and Lewis, for public comment. If either one of you have anything to say? Nope. All right. Then item 11 is adjournment. We are adjourned. Thank you all for participating.